Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 77 of the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the official show for the March of God.
For the March.
For the March of the month. Fuck me, we're 10 seconds in. For the month of March, 2017. So it means we're going to be talking about some news. We got a few news items to go through. It feels like it's been forever since we actually talked about news. But we also got some new releases. A few games came out. A couple of things
have happened in the world of Nintendo.
Yeah.
Nothing really that important, though.
And we're going to talk about a few games coming out in the month of April. So let's get things started with talking about some news. And there's a lot of video game related, like specific to just actual games, not like sales and shit. We don't really talk about that here. But Bloodstained Ritual of the Night.
That sounds terrible.
The most occult video game name ever. Well, we've talked about this one before.
This sounds fantastic.
Igarashi, the guy who was behind a lot of the Castlevania games in the modern era, left Konami, did a Kickstarter for his own project, basically making his own version of Castlevania here. But that game was kickstarted and had a Wii U stretch goal. It hit the stretch goal. It was coming to Wii U, but not until 2018. It was canceled for Wii U, of course, and it's coming to Switch instead. So I don't think that surprised anyone. I think everyone expected it to happen. It was just a matter of time before they said...
Just to clarify...
Yes.
It is not a Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. It is Bloodstained, colon,
Ritual of the Night.
Oh, right. Okay. I was imagining a room with just blood everywhere.
They'll probably be in there, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing that might happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, coming to Switch in 2018 instead of Wii U, and that's probably the right thing to do, because at this point...
It looks very, like, anime, Asian style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is a Japanese man. He makes Japanese games.
So is it just like a 2D side-scroll?
2D side-scrolling action game.
But in the vein of...
Castlevania. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Exactly. Okay, that's like interesting.
Yeah.
I think
look at the tits on that one.
Oh no, wrong page.
Wrong page, yeah. Where are you watching looking at now?
Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. Mm-hmm. We also got a few game announcements for the 3DS. There is a remake. I don't know if, Russ, do you remember talking about Radiant Historia way back in the day? That would have been like when
that
we first...
That sounds really familiar.
That was probably when we were first starting to podcast.
Radiant
Historia. It's a game from Atlus. It was for the DS. It's getting a remake on the 3DS.
Really?
Yeah, and it's a game that has to do a lot with time travel. You're jumping back and forth between two timelines. And... decisions and
concept art
of what?
No, nothing.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Appropriate. Seems appropriate. So, but yeah, Radiant Historia, Perfect Chronology is the name of the remake. It's coming to the 3DS, coming to Japan June 29th. It's not announced for North America yet, but it's Atlus. Atlus tends to bring these things to North America.
It doesn't look familiar. I'm looking at these pictures now.
Well, the crux of the game is that there are decisions that you make within the general narrative, and those will affect the skills you accumulate. So you get through one particular story section successfully, it gives you the ability to use bombs. And then those bombs will help you. You jump to another timeline, and those bombs will help you overcome an obstacle within that timeline, allow you to move forward in that one, gain a new skill, jump back to the other.
Oh, it's got timey-wimey...
Yeah.
Wishy-washy stuff.
And it gets even timier-wimier in Perfect Chronology because they're introducing like a third timeline. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work yet, but there's going to be a new scenario, as they call it, which to me sounds like a new timeline. And you can either play it simultaneously with the other timelines in the main game, or you can do it once you've successfully completed the main story.
It looks interesting.
Yeah, it's got revamped graphics, voice acting, new animations... So yeah, and a new character. There's going to be a new character as well, which would be pretty cool.
It's made by Atlus?
Yes.
Why does that name sound familiar? What else didn't they do? Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, Shin Megami Tensei, Persona. I was going to go with Dokapon Kingdom. That's the first
game
I always think of.
As it should be.
Indeed.
Because that game is fucking amazing.
What a tremendous game. God.
Man. When we ever actually do like record things, what do you do like a series of just Dokapon Kingdom?
Let's do a Let's Play of Dokapon Kingdom.
We really do. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Walk around with all of us with shit on our heads. That's just...
drawings on our faces.
It's gonna be. It's just...
Yep. Also announced for the Switch this time rather than the DS, the Senkin Densetsu series, which is Secret of Mana in North America. There's a collection of those games coming to Switch in Japan, not announced for North America yet. It's a collection of the Final Fantasy Gaiden game, which is on the Game Boy, and then the two Secret of Mana Super Nintendo games. I think only one of them actually ended up coming to North America. So it'd be cool to get this one because the third Secret of Mana game in this collection has never come to North America. So it'd be cool to see it.
Hmm.
And Secret of Mana, that's one we talked about in the Super Nintendo show, but I don't think we ever really put too much time into it, which is kind of strange because it's a multiplayer action RPG kind of game.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So yeah, maybe we should plug that one in one of these days and try to get through it a little bit more.
Hmm.
So Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentia, which is the Fire Emblem game coming out in May, is getting a limited edition, as they like to do. And it's pretty typical limited edition type stuff. You get the game, of course, you get an art book, a CD, like a set of three different pins. So, I mean, I think it's like an extra $20 over the standard price of the game. So, I don't know, if you're into like really collecting stuff, cool.
You're getting it, aren't you?
No. No, I've kind of...
But it has a CD.
It does have a CD. Pin. It's true, a pin set. I do like pins.
But it's a blank CD-ROM. Whatever you want. Yeah.
Well, it's a DVD-R. And I don't know, like, I used to really like this sort of stuff, especially for portable games, but I don't know. I flipped through the art books, like, once. The CDs, like, they sit in their jewel case in my car. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't really get a whole lot of use out of them. So this time around, I'm just going to go for the standard version and just play through the game. They also talked about, in relationship to Shadows of Valentia, there are going to be a couple of amiibo launching on same day. Yes.
Oh, no.
Two more Fire Emblem characters. Mm-hmm. The Fire Emblem characters in this game are Alm and Celica, who are characters that have not appeared in the Smash Brothers game yet. We'll
they
see.
Always, like,
Celica?
Do, like,
yeah.
The most...
Naming after Toyotas now?
They always do, like, really, like, simplistic, like, dumb brute names. Ike, Grom, Alm. Bro. It's like, they just sound like meatheads.
Elowood? Does that make you feel better?
Yeah, it sounds a little better.
Marth?
Eh.
Roy. Roy's kind of a meathead
that
name.
That is a pretty meathead name. All right, did Ike.
No, did you?
Yeah.
I was paying attention.
Well, thanks for
in,
that.
In the most recent one, it's Corrin is the, like, canonical name of that character.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy.
Robin.
King DDD, that's the same series, right?
Yeah, same
guy. Mr. Game & Watch?
Captain Rainbow.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, so these amiibo will unlock exclusive dungeons for those characters, and also some of these ghost AI characters that are controlled for just, like, that are only present for, like, a turn. I don't know. I don't care. Like, you'll have to have a new 3DS to use these things, or, like, the little puck port for amiibo. I have no interest in getting any amiibo for this particular game. So... one other little minor, not really a game announcement, but could turn into a game one day. Now, Factor 5 is a company we've talked about a little bit in the past. They did a lot of, like, the Rogue Squadron games for the N64 and the GameCube. They're very big supporters of Nintendo through the N64 and the GameCube era. They went defunct just before the Wii came out. But they're back. They have arisen from the ashes, as it were. They did the Turrican series on the Super Nintendo, and I believe we talked about one of those games in the past on the Super Nintendo show.
Hmm. Are they still going under the same moniker?
Yeah, they're still under Factor 5, and they've reacquired the rights to the Turrican series, and it seems like they're developing something for Switch. It's all been very vague. It's hard to get any sort of concrete information about this, but it looks like they're making games again, which I think is good for everybody. No, we normally don't talk about sales in this particular podcast.
Oh,
however,
boy.
there is something
money
really fun.
That's roller suspenders.
Yeah.
Stogies.
GameStop came out and announced that they have seen a bump in used Wii U consoles.
Oh, nice.
Due to, they attribute it to the popularity of Breath of the Wild and the total Switch sellouts that are happening. So people going looking for a Switch can't find one and say, I'll just get a used Wii U.
Nice.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's great. That's great for people who haven't had one and get this access to this library of games that, you know, will keep them busy for a while if they dive into it and start playing a lot of stuff.
No.
So I just thought it funny.
I also heard GameStop's closing a lot of locations.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
When was that happening?
I heard on the radio, but I got no idea. Hmm. It was a passing thing on the radio talk show I listened to.
Okay. I mean, well, I think they've been working very hard to try to find ways to keep doors open, like with... Oh, what was the product line that they sell in there now? Is it ThinkGeek?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, they sell ThinkGeek stuff
in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got a lot of swag in there now.
Yeah, they're selling a lot of, like, non-game stuff.
Some of it's got me tempted.
But like,
it's pretty
like,
cool.
But, like, related to nerd culture kind of stuff.
Hats and shirts,
mm-hmm.
plushy toys, you know, things from their popular series and not-so-popular series.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one is still glutted with a bunch of the Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh,
stuff.
Sure.
I guess they thought that was going to be.
Which I still have no idea what that is.
It's.
You don't have to describe it. It's okay.
I don't even know it either.
Yeah, I will leave it.
I watched a ton of like. I played the first couple ones myself. Again, it's this really.
There's more than one.
There's. It's actually a really weird little gaming. It's a niche gaming subculture that exists of people that are really obsessed with this game, because it's actually kind of fascinating because there is this insanely deep backstory to what is essentially a. Really basic, simple game where you are like the night watchman at a Chuck E. Cheese-ish kind of place.
Hmm.
And then there's the animatronic robots that kind of just, you know, wander around. And you get 5 voicemails and you have to survive 5 nights on the job. And the voicemail is basically a guy who's saying sort of like, yeah, they're acting really weird. Things are kind of weird, so get ready for that. And then basically they hunt you down and you gotta juggle a few... things that have limited resources, like these doors and these lights, and if you run out of battery, you're basically about to get attacked.
Huh.
But yeah, it's super duper simple, but it buried within all of it is this insane backstory about a couple of different locations that have these places.
Yeah, the bear actually wanted to be a lawyer, but you know, got a DUI and kind of ruined it. He had to coach a hockey team for a few years. And
I
love that reference is coming up again. Is Mighty Ducks the new Reign of Fire?
Pretty much, I like it.
Well, I mean, there are some commonalities and there are some similar things there.
To the Mighty Ducks?
Yeah, oh, I mean, Emilio Estevez is a voice actor. So, it's got that much going for it, right? No, like, Five Nights at Freddy's it makes a better story than a game, I guess. It's funny to hear people break down what it's all about, because it is, I think, based on some real events that happened at a Chuck E. Cheese-like location in the 80s. Is really
so the animatronic Chuck E. Cheese killed a man?
There was an employee that murdered some other employees.
Oh, okay.
But then...
Oh,
you
probably
also,
did that too.
Well, it's juggling this other thing. One of the more interesting things is that you're seeing essentially the hallucinations of a child that watched somebody being stuffed into one of those suits. Because that's what it's all about. These things are chasing around eating children.
Oh,
but
God.
What it means is that it was probably just a really young kid saw somebody... Like they say at the theme parks, never take your hat off. Never take the costume off.
Right.
Don't spoil the illusion. They probably saw somebody being jammed into one of those costumes and was like, oh my God, they're eating them. You know, and there's this whole story about it. That's really cool. And yeah, people make spin-off games. People like it. It's just tense click stuff.
Oh, like a point-and-click adventure?
Yeah, like you're in a stationary position the entire time you're playing these games.
Oh, okay.
And then you kind of just pan left and right. You have 2 doors. So, like, you'll just be doing these things where you're hopping around on monitors that are all throughout this menu.
Hmm.
And, like, you'll go to the stage, and it's like the curtains are shut. And then you go look at some other ones to make sure nothing's happening, and then you go back to the other ones, and the curtains have been opened a little bit. And then you're clicking around, and then they've opened up a little wider, and you see 2 red eyes staring through them.
Hmm.
And that means that they're just approaching... And then they go on patterns. They have these walking patterns, so you kind of need to, like, be constantly vigilant.
Oh, okay. I'm starting to... There's a game, we talked about it briefly about a year ago, Star Fox Guard, which came out with Star Fox Zero, and it had to do with, like, setting up, like, this maze and using your cameras as gun turrets, and you had to, like, flip between all of your cameras and, like, watch them all, and at the same time, like, switch to the one that has enemies walking through the maze and shoot them down.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of understanding why people compare it to Five Nights at Freddy's. That's the similar mechanic. Like, looking at the monitors.
Just jumping through monitors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if anybody really wants to know what this is, there's this guy that does these game theories. That's his channel. It's called Game Theories. He's done dozens of videos of this. He's probably got 7 or 8 hours of content dedicated to breaking down what this game is actually supposed to be about. So if you really want to go down that
road, his parents are really proud.
Yeah. Well, hey, he's actually one of the most popular people on YouTube. He's part of the YouTube Red thing. He actually is kind of a big deal on YouTube. Mm. So, but hey, if you want to know what it is, go for
Stop plugging other people on our show.
Yeah. Sorry.
Golly. You're the only thing that's important.
Drink Pepsi.
Damn it.
and Amazon. Buy your stuff from Amazon.
Yeah. Buy all your Pepsi on Amazon.
And watch the Mighty Ducks.
Stream it through Amazon.
You can make it back. You can stream it through Amazon.
Oh, and HD. And get the whole pack while you're at it. I mean, let's face it. I mean, one is clearly the best.
Uh-huh.
Two and three are fine.
I watched Back to the Future the other day. That was fantastic. I was so happy.
That was a good movie.
Oh, my God. Such a good movie.
Zemeckis still owes me money, though.
He's like, something wrong with the future. He's like, what, do we grow up to be assholes or something? He's like, it's worse. It's
no, it's kids.
It's kids' money. It's kids' money.
We just reenact Back to the Future for the next half hour. Just as many lives as we can
run along. Pants on, I watched a Jimmy Kimmel skit that they did. Doc Brown and Marty showed up in a DeLorean on a big stage, and they came out and they did this little, like, talking thing about it was back in 2015 when the time came up.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's going on now? It was like the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And who's Marty McFly? What's the actor?
Michael J. Fox,
your guy.
Scott Wolf.
He does not look good. Like he's like missing his cues and he's jittery. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just sad.
He has Parkinson's, right?
I know. But I felt bad. Like I'm watching this, like, oh man. But
shockingly, Wes judging the disabled.
All right, thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Real.
It wasn't what I was going for there, but
it was something that we thought was just a little too out of bounds, and
yeah, crossed the line there.
God damn it, guys.
Anyway, so
you're calling Spook Peckerwood. That's probably my favorite clip.
That's a good one.
We don't want to miss no reefer at it.
The kid's just wearing 3D glasses for no goddamn reason. Just out in the room.
I'm not going to start you a tab unless you order something.
If you want a Pepsi, pal, you got to pay for it. Mayor!
I will be Mayor. Oh, man. That movie's so great.
I'll show you, Mr. Carruthers.
Oh, Robert Zemeckis. What a great director.
Yep. Okay, so a couple more pieces of news before we move on here. And this isn't really news. I just thought it was kind of funny. I think his name escapes me, but I think he was like a character designer or an artistic director for Breath of the Wild. He, I guess, was asked why Link doesn't just have his hat by default. Like, there's specific, like, garments, like pieces of armor you could put him in where he gets his hat. But this person involved with the development of the game said that Link doesn't wear his hat in Breath of the Wild because they're having a hard time making it look cool. I do have some bad news.
Yeah.
It never looked cool. It's just a goofy hat.
But I like that he's trying. Right? In his heart of hearts, he wants Link to be
how do you make that? Because he, like, specifically cited, like, Twilight Princess, and like how the hat now was like long and kind of flopped around and stuff, and I guess they didn't like the way it turned out or something. I mean,
I think it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, like,
for that kind of hat,
his hat, like, it's just kind of a fact. It's there. He wears this goofy little hat, and it's just part of the character. So we all just kind of accept that Link runs around wearing this hat. Like, it's not like,
what kind
of
hat is that again?
I have no idea.
Well, it's like, I Google
it's
it.
Like
I
a snood for men.
Well, Link does not like dress cool.
Right.
He wears like boots and shorts.
Right.
You know, and he's got a big big blousy shirt. You know, with a shirt on underneath it. And he's got the long blonde hair. He's really effeminate.
I guess that's
he's a foot shorter than Zelda. Topic. So like Zelda's really like he's really slumming it there with Link in a way. I don't know.
Mm.
Link is a great hero though.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, I just thought it was funny.
He dresses like such a tool. Like, he really... Like,
yeah, it's
like,
hard
when
to,
you
like,
put him in the chic costume, he looks like a rock star. But when he's just wearing his normal stuff, like... And granted, like, from what I've seen of the costume... it's not costume, it's armor. Mm-hmm. You put him in all the different armor stuff.
It's costume. He's a plate dress-up, it's fine.
He looks pretty cool. He does look pretty awesome, but like you think of the old drawings, the classic drawings of what Link looks like, he never looked cool.
No, they even kind of make fun of it.
What are you talking about? Link looks like a badass in Twilight. I mean,
that's the closest he's ever come to not looking like a total.
they address it in Wind Waker. They're like, oh, you wear this, it's the traditional thing, and like you put it on, and you like got this look on your face, like, oh, I feel goofy as shit. Because it is goofy, but it's like it's a continuation of design from the 8-bit era where he looked like that. To give his character like this sort of adventurous personality, and also so that you can distinguish things. Like, okay, there's where his head ends because there's his hat. You know, when you're working with this small group of pixels and trying to give this like these characters personality, you got to work within your confines. But anyway, I didn't mean for this to turn into a discussion.
No, I think we should bring it back.
I just thought it was fun.
I think we should get
shorts
one.
Shorts and boots. What the fuck? Is it like hosting Legends of the Hidden Temple? Like, how is this like? He's got this as his combination. This
and sometimes, like, sometimes it's not even like the shorts. It's just like the tunic, the shirt dress that's pulled down to almost his knees.
Oh my god! Yeah, yeah.
And that's usually the child Link. Doesn't even have the shorts. Anyway, last little bit of news: the Nintendo Switch came out on March 3rd. I don't know anyone.
The what?
The Nintendo Switch.
Huh? What's that?
Right. So. Should we take a break? Come back with some new releases?
What is it, like a new power bump for the Wii U?
Yeah, it's a new accessory for the Wii U.
So oh, goddammit. I bet it has some kind of interaction with Amiibos.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Amiibo are here to stay. They're not going. All right, well, let's take a break and then come back with some new releases.
Yeah.
I ate
Bloodstained Ritual of the Unexpected.
I ate Chipotle for a week and now I have bloodstained. I had a bloodstained ritual of the night.
You're up all night. That guy Igarashi, he can be a bit up his own ass at times. He is way too into Castlevania. Like he when he took over Castlevania, like the series, it's like the gameplay is really good. The series turned into fan fiction.
No, he looks like a guy that could be up his own ass about stuff.
Oh yeah, and he would like go to like gaming events like E3 like with a whip and like
oh goddamn it
cosplaying his own characters. That's the kind of
Harrison
guy.
Harrison Ford did fucking do that even, and he's Indiana Jones.
Harrison Ford wears all clothes resentfully. That guy is too cool to be anyway. But we got new releases. We got new games.
Yeah.
Mostly on the Switch here.
Oh.
Of course, Zelda's the big one. We're going to get to that last. So I'm going to burn through these other ones really quick. We're going to start with, and it's not going to be quick at all. We're going to start with Blaster Master Zero, which came out on the Switch as well as the 3DS. This one was published and developed by Inti Creates, makers of such games as Azure Striker Gunvolt and Mega Man Zero and Mighty No. 9. Wasn't their fault, though. And they worked in cooperation with Sunsoft Entertainment, who has the license for Blaster Master. So this is a game, it's a quasi-remake or reimagining of the NES game called Blaster Master. And the series always kind of revolves around this duality of gameplay. There's two different basic modes. There are these side-scrolling sections where you are in control of this tank, and you do tank things, like you roll around and you shoot things, and it's a side-scrolling action game. And then there are these sections where you're able
City
to...
City building strategy game.
Right? No, I think you might be looking at ActRaiser.
Oh.
The second section is this new top-down, sort of Zelda action-y kind of game.
Okay, I can see that.
So yeah, what you end up doing is you're rolling around your tank, and you can actually eject your pilot, whose name is Jason, at any time.
This is boring.
Wow. Then the tank's name is Sophia the Third. And they're in... They're
what about
like,
one and two? Like, what happened to them?
They, it was Sophia the Third since it the first is, game. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
What? Like, oh, just it. Unanswered questions.
So, Sophia the First was a dune buggy. Sophia the Second was a gumball machine. Sophia the Third is a tank.
Oh, man.
And that's canon, by the way. But you can do is you can like jump out of your tank as this Jason character, and he's like only a couple pixels tall. He's really tiny, and you can't do much with him. His gun has limited range. The only reason you'd want to get out of your tank as Jason would be to either enter these dungeon sections or to shoot an enemy that the tank is too tall to actually shoot. Some enemies can creep under its line of fire, but. When you enter these dungeon sections as Jason, it turns into this overhead action sequence. And there's no real puzzle-solving elements in these dungeons. As you would think of like in a Zelda with like lighting torches and moving blocks around and things like that. But it's there are some light lateral puzzle elements in the sections with the tank, the side-scrolling stuff. It's more like akin to Metroid, though, where you grab a power-up that allows you to access the next section. It's not even quite as complicated as a Metroid, where, you know, you grab a new power-up and it allows you to access, like, these three different sections and backtrack and get some more stuff over there. It's more like, hey, you got this new power-up, this is your key to the gate that allows you to enter the next area. So, most of the tank upgrades allow you, or like, give you different maneuverability options. Like, you can hover, your tank can now swim or wall crawl. And the game is just more about harnessing all of your skills together rather than building these overpowering stats, because you don't really ever upgrade your firepower or your defense. So the enemies that you're fighting at the beginning are going to be just as tough as the enemies you're fighting at the end, but what they do to sort of mix it up is have all these different environmental elements that mix up the platforming and action of the game. But you know what they could have done is taken a really modern approach to game design and have you do things like gain levels and buff your firepower or defense. But what they end up accomplishing by just having it be like, no, this is your tank, you get some new guns, you get some new maneuverability, but you're not becoming this overpowered wrecking machine, is you always get these combat sections that are really brisk. And backtracking is never a chore, and nor is it ever really a simple task. You always got to be mindful of where you're going, because you're never going to roll over anybody. So what they're trying to do in this game, what they really adeptly pull off, is they have this retro-inspired action game with really tight controls, lots of power-ups and weapons to experiment. It's not very tough, but progressing the game feels really good, so it doesn't really matter that you're never overly challenged by anything. It does take on a lot of modern sensibilities that make the experience a lot more palatable. So, and I'll probably make a few comparisons to the original NES game, even though I really didn't play it all that much. Enemies in the game don't respawn unless you are entering or exiting a major section. The game is divided up into 8 sections, and then there are a bunch of different dungeons in each section. So that's unless cool. You're moving from section 4 to 5, or like entering a dungeon and coming back out, enemies aren't going to respawn. So you can roll through a whole area, clear out as many guys as you can, and as you're moving around trying to discover new things.
Well, if there's no like defense and power-ups or, you know, individual ways to like boost your character, that's a good thing, it seems like. Because otherwise you're just making an unnecessary grind to get from place to place. Like, God forbid you get lost or you end up taking a bad path and you just want to get back out.
Right, and it gives you like this path of no resistance to get to where you're going. Or, you know, if you just feel like trying to hover somewhere or access a place you haven't been to yet, it's nice that you don't have to worry about enemies constantly respawning. So they do also give you frequent save points and checkpoints. There are unlimited lives. You don't really have to worry about dying in this game. There are a lot of drops for your HP and basically your mana, because you have your tank has special abilities like homing missiles and cluster missiles and a charge shot and a laser, and those things will consume your mana points, which does refill slowly on its own, but there's lots of drops to always keep your tank running, and homing missiles are super useful because there are a ton of enemies that will approach you.
Are you calling it mana or are they calling it mana?
I am calling it mana.
There is probably a real name for it.
Probably.
If it is mana, I'm okay with that.
Well,
it's a fucking tank.
Yeah,
it's energy.
Yeah, it's just kind of like a universal language for MP.
Yeah.
This is
I was
like
kind of in my heart of heart hoping that they were dedicated to calling it
mana. your tank mana.
Life force. Your tank's life force.
Yeah. There are...
I mean, it does have a name, Ryan. God.
That's true. Gumball for a mother? Is that what he said?
I did not mean to denote any sort of lineage there. Like, they're
so
not
the Gumball machine gave birth to the tank.
That's not what I'm saying. There... So the other really nice thing... Okay, so in the original Blaster Master, when you enter dungeon areas, the power of your gun is tied directly to the damage you have taken. So the more HP that you have, the more powerful your gun, the more damage you take, the less damage your gun is going to do. Which can be frustrating when you start racking up a lot of damage, because then you're less and less capable of dealing damage. You once you get to a certain point, you might as well just go fucking kill yourself, because you're not going to be able to do much of anything. So in Blaster Master Zero, the power of your weapons is not directly proportional to your HP. So you can, there are basically refills for your gun capacity, I suppose. Like your gun.
Your gun mana.
Yeah, your gun mana. It's 1 through 8. And that's
you
not.
You can drink an elixir or an ether.
Right. So when you lose a health, you also lose a gun mana.
I just had a picture of him holding the gun and like pouring a bottle down the barrel of it. Yeah.
It's just like a radioactive waste. Okay.
When you lose a hit point, you lose a gun mana, so to speak. But there are drops to restore, and I'm talking about the top-down sections at this point, when you're just playing as Jason, because it doesn't work that way for the tank. When you're in these top-down dungeon sections, there are HP restore items, and there are also gun mana restore items. So you can have really low HP, but you might have collected a bunch of gun mana, so your gun is powerful. And the other thing they don't do in this game is that the gun power doesn't really decrease as your gun mana decreases. What it is, it's a gauge. It's 1 through 8, your gun mana. And every time you upgrade, you get access to a new gun. So in the beginning, you have 1 gun mana, you get a little pea shooter. On the next one, you're able to access a gun that penetrates walls. And you can flip back to your pea shooter if you feel like it. You shouldn't. And then there's one that's like a bolt of electricity that when it makes contact with an enemy, it spreads out and hits a lot more. There's a spread shot, like in Contra. There is a rapid-fire gun, like in Contra. There is a flamethrower, not as useful as Contra, but it's still pretty cool.
Hmm.
And the most powerful one...
If we ever had to like sit down and rate, do like a top 10 list of most efficient and best flamethrowers... Contra's going to be up there.
Contra 3, yeah.
It's a good flamethrower. It's going to be up there.
It's a very wonderful one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the level 8 gun is the most useful one because it's kind of a spread shot, but it's like a 5 spread shot. It's a 3, and it's more of like they all travel linearly, and it's a gun that goes through walls and penetrates enemies. It's this really super-powered gun. So it is in your best interest to not take damage, so you can always use this level 8 gun. That doesn't mean that the other guns become useful, like the one that I mentioned where it's a bolt of electricity that spreads out and kills a lot of enemies. That's a really useful one to have. The flamethrower is a really useful one to have in ice sections, because there are these spikes on the floor that you can melt with your flamethrower. And spikes in every other video game ever fucking made, when you touch them, you're going to take some damage. And it's a good way to rack up a lot of damage and lose a lot of access to your guns. So, it might sound annoying that when you take any sort of damage, you start to lose access to these guns. What they do is really early on, you get access to this basically shield. And what this shield does is it takes 1 damage for you. So that when... You still take, when you get hit by an enemy, you still take your HP damage, but it protects your guns from downgrading at all. So you still have access to all the ones you've accumulated so far. And then once you've used that shield, it takes like 5 seconds to recharge. So unless you get yourself unless you're in this really shitty situation where you're just getting hammered by enemies and just a bloodbath, it's likely that you're not going to be downgrading your guns very often. You're always going to have access to your best stuff. But yeah, it's just a really nice modern take on that really frustrating system that was in the original NES game. The game looks really nice, has some nice chiptune music, some really nice sprite artwork going on. It's a brisk little game.
Like this one.
Yeah.
One day he came across a creature he had never seen before. It's a fucking frog. And the kid looks like he's probably 15.
Okay, so I skipped a lot of the dialogue. I'm not sure.
So how do we go from I'm meeting a frog for the first time in my life to I now have a tank named Sophia?
Okay.
Was a gumball machine.
Well, I'll try to get into this.
Father a conveyor belt.
as much as I can. Because no, I did not read the story. Jason was living in this dystopian future where a lot of the planet is dying.
AKA Las Vegas.
Sure. And
he has a football team now.
That's going to make it all better.
Oh, no. And then, no, I can tell you. I've seen the two images that tell the entire story.
he discovers a frog.
So he discovers a large vehicle in some sort of wormhole.
Right.
The frog's got, like, a tadpole tail with a bell on the end of it.
Don't worry about what the frog looks like. It's actually a robot. So he finds this frog, which because he hasn't seen very much life on his dying planet. So he follows it and discovers like this underworld that is actually poisoning the planet and the tank. And luckily, there's a tank there where he can go around and destroy all of like the creatures inhabiting the underworld and therefore bring life back to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think the crux of the game. There's a girl that you meet for some reason.
Oh yeah, this one.
They're just
That's the girl.
Yeah, how's she doing?
Happens to find a tank.
She did not.
Working order, fully loaded, sitting there, keys in the ignition.
This sounds like it's about to get sexual. It's like from the moment I held her in my arms, my blaster rifle began. It's so good.
He doesn't use a rifle in the game. I don't know what that line of dialogue is.
Goes off for no apparent reason.
Anyway. It's a brisk little game. It took me about 8 hours to get through, and that's not reading story, so add another 10 minutes onto that. It does have 8 different sections that are interconnected in different ways, and each of them have their own themes, but they never really get tropey. Like, I mentioned there was ice in one world, and there is sort of like, there's a world that is kind of overlaid with ice, but that's really the only sort of like tropey area I can think of. There's no like, oh, this is the water level and this is the fire level and this is the desert level. It doesn't do that bullshit. It's just kind of,
yeah.
All the areas have their own sort of environmental themes. Like one is a factory and one is like this really grotesque mutant horde nesting area. It's really gross. But they don't like fall into like the standard video game traps of having the more elemental type stuff in there. I did try it in co-op, which is pretty cool. Me and a buddy at work put the Switch down in tabletop mode, and we each used one of the little Joy-Cons as a controller.
Hmm.
And it worked pretty well. Second player is just a target reticle. So it kind of like moves around like a ghost. You can shoot anything you want. It doesn't upgrade or anything. It's just a constant thing.
Hmm.
And I give this game a really good recommendation. I thought it was really good. And it is an absolute steal at $10. You can
nice.
Get it on Switch or 3DS. A game that is a little bit harder to recommend is Zelda Breath of the Wild. I'm joking, it's Bomberman. Super Bomberman R. This one published and developed by Konami. I'll start off by saying I usually don't find the formula for Bomberman very interesting. I more purchased this one on the novelty that Konami was actually making a game rather than my love for Bomberman himself. Like, we talked about Bomberman before, about playing it in the dentist office.
Yep.
Not together, but the same dentist office.
Yeah, I think Bomberman would make a really cool Smash Brothers character.
Yeah, that would be cool. That's a good idea. Okay, see, the crux of Bomberman is that all of your attacks are delayed. So you plant a bomb, and then you have to wait for it to explode on itself. So it would be an interesting Smash character to have to like play all these delay attacks.
Set
and
traps
try to
constantly.
Mm-hmm.
We could have like a bomb that wraps around walls or surfaces. Like if you're standing on a platform, it could wrap around the entire platform.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you pretty much have to win by edgehogging most of the time.
Pretty much.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of cool to see what that sort of character would be like.
It'd actually be a lot like Snake.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, because the thing about Snake, Snake's kind of terrible if you just want to get into a fight head on, but he's got all these amazing delay and annoy tactics. He's got the rocket launcher.
God, I hate snakes.
The instant
so much.
Out by having
I'm
his.
So happy they removed him.
Yeah.
So happy.
The box. He's got the box.
Oh, he's not in the new ones?
No, he's not.
I play so much more Brawl. But yeah, like, I remember he was always kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, he was very obnoxious. Didn't you always play Snake?
No.
Who was it that always played Snake?
I don't know.
We always played, like, somebody was like, I'm going to play Snake. And I'm like, yeah, because you're a douchebag. Like,
I only play Snake and Sonic. And then that's probably why we stopped inviting them. That's probably why, right there.
Well, you know, my guy was Game & Watch. Oh, love Game & Watch.
Oh, that's right, yeah. That and the bacon.
Yeah, Peach is amazing. It's always
you two have a gentleman's agreement. And
of course.
Ruin the game for everybody else.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was playing Link half the time, and, you know, it's... Can't go beating up on women.
It's really annoying. I'm sitting here walking around, and all of a sudden, arrows and bombs are flying from one corner. So like, all right, radish, golf club, radish.
The big sexy ass just banging into you.
Did you ever try getting good? Like, that might have helped.
Yeah, it probably would have worked out for you if you actually tried to not suck at the game.
You know, I'm a terrifying Samus. Sure, shut your mouth.
But Bomberman... As a video game.
See, this is how excited Bomberman is. We were talking about something else.
We were talking about the game where you just randomly trip and fall. Yeah. But Bomberman, he's all about like these delayed attacks. So you like walk down a corridor, you destroy an obstacle. You plant a bomb to destroy an obstacle. You walk around the other side to get safe. It blows up. You do it until you've cleared enough of the gray dark to actually start taking out enemies. But the game doesn't really ever utilize the fact that all of his attacks are delayed in the actual design all that well. This game would work just as well if you just remotely detonated the bombs rather than using the delay as an actual tactic.
That's why in Bomberman 64 they gave him that.
It's cool that you bring that up because we should actually talk about that game at some point.
It's a good-ass game.
But if you could actually like set up enemies somehow into like falling into your traps, like if you like use something in the environment to like set up a trap or like I don't know conveyor belts or girders or some shit to sort of funnel enemies where you want them to go.
It's always funny when like you see an enemy walk around a corridor and there's a block there, so it's a dead end, and then you just block them with a bomb and walk away, and you just watch them as that brief moment of panic and realization hit them, and like, oh god, this is how it ends.
It's funny, but you do that across 40 stages. Like that's the primary tactic for taking out every enemy.
Yeah, pretty much. It gets old.
Yeah.
That's why I never, you know, only play at the doctor's office.
And it's like you're reading my notes, because my very next line is, but it's mostly just chaining them into alleys where they can't escape, or just dropping a ton of bombs and hoping for the best. Yes. And just hoping that they walk into them. I don't want to shit too much on this game. I just don't think it's very inspired in its overall design. The boss fights are pretty cool, at least in their second forms. The first form of a boss fight is the same as a level where you're just on a grid and trying to corner them with your bombs while they're dropping their own. But the second forms always have some sort of tactic to where like you have to destroy like these four things around the map and that'll open them up for attack. Or like there's a big like a quadrupedal robot monster, you have to destroy its feet and then its head falls to the ground, you have to bomb the shit out of that. So, you know, at least they do have a little bit of strategy and planning in those. But in a game where like delays and planning ahead should be an integral part of the gameplay, it's just not there. I also did some of the co-op for this game as well. Setting up the controllers for like a tabletop co-op is a bit of a hassle in this game. What we ended up having to do, like we couldn't just like take the Joy-Cons off the Switch and then it automatically detect that they were off and like reconfigure them as we saw fit. We actually had to exit the game, go out to a root menu in the Switch hardware, sync the controllers the way we wanted them, and then re-enter the game and restart it.
Huh.
Now you contrast.
That seems convoluted.
Right. Convoluted. And we had, like, we couldn't figure it out. We could not figure, like, what we were doing until we finally just, like, looked it up on YouTube. How do we play co-op in Bomberman R?
Yeah.
And someone did a video, like, already, like, it was, like, the day after it came out and already had, like, 20,000 views. Like, people can't figure this shit out. It was buried so deep in there.
So, Bomberman 64 cartridge.
Yeah.
I gotta check on Amazon. But was eBay, I'm seeing it for $19, but like
that's not bad.
Yeah, I'm seeing another one for $500.
That's probably with packaging and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't think it should be more than a few bucks.
Let's check this out.
But just to contrast, while you're looking that up, Blaster Master, when we played co-op, it was so much smoother experience. we took off the controllers and we set up a co-op mode, and it allowed us to configure the controllers right there within the game. So much easier, so much better designed.
$20.
Is this coming out on any other console?
Super Bomberman R?
Yeah, is it like on the DS? Is it?
No, not that I'm aware. Just a Switch right now.
Don't get it mixed up with Bomberman Hero, though, because that game was shit.
I believe you.
But Bomberman 64 was the shit.
And they also had that song, that great little jingle for the commercial.
I don't remember that.
No, we'll look it up later.
I just remember throwing a bomb at Dragon's face.
Was it Spyro? It should have been Spyro. Fucking
awesome. No, it was a big blue dragon. Mm. And then fight fish.
You get to fight a fish. Wow, that's great. A
big
great.
Giant fish. Wow. And you're fighting him. I never could beat him because I couldn't figure it out.
Hmm. Did you try throwing a bomb at it?
Oh, damn it.
But back to Bomberman R, there's this economy to the game that requires a bunch of grinding if you're going for unlockables. So, first of all, in this game, you have lives, which, great. How archaic. There's fucking lives in this game.
Mm-hmm.
When you expire all 9 of your lives, to continue, you need to spend coins, which you start out with this, like I think like 1,600 coins or something like that. And then you get more for completing a single-player campaign.
Why does it run out of coins?
You can run out of coins if you use continues too much. So, when you play through on the easiest difficulty level, when you play through on easy mode, to continue costs 10 coins. So you can continue a lot. When you bump that up to the next one, normal mode, it chews up to 400 coins.
Oh, damn.
From 10 to 400 to continue. And really, the only other difference between easy and normal mode is the enemies move faster. So, if you need to continue...
Which was playing on easy mode. I mean, you should feel bad about yourself.
Shut up.
Are you playing on easy mode?
Fuck you. Yes, I played on easy mode.
What is wrong with you?
I played on normal mode.
You should be ashamed.
I played on normal mode, and I nearly ran out of fucking coins. Is what happened. Because this game fucks with things like lives and continues. So, yeah, it doesn't take long to run out of coins
so
on normal
mode.
So,
you with your children, you gotta teach them to take the easy way out?
Yes, always. Path of least resistance, every time. You can also use these coins for things like unlockables like characters and bonus stages, but you don't get very many coins for completing the game on easy mode, maybe rightfully so.
What kind of characters are there? They're all just freaking Bomberman.
You start out with 8 different Bomberman characters, and as far as I can tell, there is no goddamn difference between all of them outside of like their idle animations. Right. Then, once you complete the game, there are 5 villain characters that you can unlock and play as. I don't know if they're different at all because they all cost fucking 5,000 coins.
Oh, God.
Which I'm never going to have. So, you know, I think that the mileage in this game may vary. You do have to play a ton, it seems, to actually unlock these bonus characters. Unless you're really fucking good at Bomberman or playing through on hard mode, maybe they give you a ton of coins for finishing that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I might try again on a higher difficulty level one day, but I'm really in no mud, no
life's
rush.
Too short.
Yeah.
What is the price point on this game?
$49.99.
Yeah, that's crazy. Does this look like the kind of game that is going to deliver $49 worth of content?
No.
Well, I think...
Do you buy, like, an actual disc? Like,
yeah,
cartridge?
Yeah, it's a cartridge.
Oh, God, I thought it was just going to be like a...
But you get the hand job, right?
For, like,
do
I,
they cuddle you after they fuck you?
First of all, Amazon Prime, get a discount. You don't have to pay full price for this thing.
People like
really
that's where GameStop's closing.
Like, I don't fucking feel bad for GameStop. Fuck GameStop.
I feel bad.
Price gouging used games.
I'm sorry, I work at Radio Shack, and I'm only there till the end of May.
Hmm.
And then my store's closing. Because fucking people go on Amazon.
You know what? You should work for Amazon. Go to work for them.
Oh, yeah, become a robot.
Yes. Oh.
Oh, God.
This is great. You'll be the best sorting machine they ever had.
But, you know, it's hard to give this game a recommendation, you know, not based on the price. I mean, money is going to mean different things to different people. And mileage can vary. Like, if you're really into Bomberman, you can probably get a lot out of this game. I am just not thrilled about just the overall setup and design of a Bomberman game. It's a lot of hurry up and wait, and there's no real strategy or pre-planning for like your waiting phase. But anyway, should we move over to the main event?
Yeah.
The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Oh, I thought
it was
going to be 1-2 Switch.
No, I didn't get 1-2 Switch, okay. And I don't plan on it. I'm going to go ahead and
Don't waste your time with that.
Hard pass on that.
Maybe a $5 bin.
Oh, but... you get to be a cowboy. This sounds awesome.
Yeah, so first of all, highest possible recommendation for Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Really tremendous game. And this gets,
you're not going out on a limb, by the way. Right. I think pretty much anybody that reviews video games has given this a...
Right. You know, pretty much, you don't look at Breath of the Wild as a $60 price point. You look at it as a $360 price point. Because that's why you buy the Switch. Fucking Breath of the Wild. And it's worth every goddamn penny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to pay it one day.
Oh my god. If I wasn't going to be out of a job, tax return was going to go to that.
Uh-huh.
But I'm out of a job and to pay, so...
You'll start your Patreon. So... Yeah, I mean, this game has been a huge topic for the past month. We haven't talked about it because we were saving it to like have a full in-depth discussion.
We should really have, you know, we should just cut it off right now and not do it and just do a separate show just Breath of the Wild.
Just
hold
off on our Breath
long enough.
Just hold off on our Breath of the Wild discussion for another month.
Not another month. Well, I mean, I just say we should post that as a separate show. It's going to be long enough.
We don't even have to get into like particulars about the game at this point. Most of the conversation has been around like personal anecdotes and story of like discovery and freedom and figuring out all the things that you can do in this game. So we won't even have to touch on any of that. We'll try to approach this in a different way. All like the people's stories.
Yes, we need to talk about the seeds.
All 900 of them. I'll just start this off like right here before we get too deep into it. Expect spoilers. We probably won't talk about story or where to find things or anything like that. But if it comes up in conversation, we're not going to avoid spoiling things because
the Master Sword's in it.
I mean, it's been out for a month, which, you know, a lot of, like, some people might not be able to find a Switch or a copy of the game, and that sucks.
Don't buy a Wii U.
But you know, I find it really difficult to have like an in-depth discussion about a game trying to dance around giving away that, hey, you can get a fire rod. Like, yes, of course you can. But
they're kind of crap, aren't they?
Fire rods, they are weak, but they fire projectiles, so you can kill things from a distance. But like people's like personal stories of like discovery and adventure are really cool to hear. It really demonstrates the artistic nature of gaming at its best, where you can have this shared experience. We could both be playing Zelda, but basically be playing completely different games because we're playing it in wildly different ways. So, what I wanted to really bring up was trying to talk about how they went about creating this, as they call it, open-air adventure game, and how they applied all of this openness to just everything in the game. So, we can start by like talking about like, the vastness and the seamlessness of the overworld. You can go wherever the fuck you want, pick a direction and go. Oh, and you don't have like these loading screens between different areas. It's just if you can fly far enough to get anywhere, like there's no loading in between anything. You can fly from one corner to the other, and it's all just there. And it actually, this game is probably using some sort of assets or tech from Xenoblade Chronicles X, because of the same way in that game, you get into your mech and you fly anywhere, and it's all just there. And you can see a lot of like the Xenoblade fingerprints all over this game tech as well, but we won't have to get into all of that. But like even like the main dungeons that you encounter in the game, they're not broken up into isolated rooms. It's all just, hey, you're inside this elephant now, and there are different sections, but it's not like you're opening a door and then going into it. The door closes and then you have to solve this individual puzzle within that room. In two dungeons that I've played, there is one primary mechanic that you have to manipulate in the elephant. It was its trunk. You control its trunk, and that controls where water is being sprayed, and it affects these water wheels inside the dungeon. In the salamander up on Death Mountain, you can rotate it 90 degrees to where it's either like sitting on its belly or it's kind of like propped up on its two legs. And that will affect the orientation of different rooms. And while you're doing all this, you're also using all of your other powers that you accumulate on the Great Plateau, your magnesis and your stasis and your bombs. And you're using all those to solve these puzzles. And it's usually about, like, so far, it's been like 5 puzzles in each dungeon that you get to. And then it opens up the door so you can fight the boss. So it's a pretty big departure from the standard design of Zelda dungeons, because it's usually like, this is like, you're in this enclosed area, this is your dungeon, figure out how to get to all these closed off rooms, use keys, find the one big key to get you to the end. And you know, you still essentially have like, you need the one big key to get to the end, but rather than like having it be a physical key, it's just visit these 5 terminals, solve these puzzles to get to your 5 terminals, and they'll just open up the door. So, but it's a really interesting way to approach a dungeon design, because when they were going about thinking, like, what is it, like, if we want to make a truly open game, let's apply that to everything, including dungeons, which are these things that are very, like, always since the beginning of the series, been these very closed off areas, maybe mm-hmm. with the exception of, like, A Link to the Past, the dungeon in the Lost Woods, where you actually had to, like, leave the dungeon and then enter it from different areas.
That's a good point.
But anyway, so what you end up with when you have, well, one other thing about the dungeons. So you can solve these series of puzzles to get to your terminals in basically any order. There's no, as far as I've encountered, there's no set order, like you have to do this one, then this one, then this one. But you can just do them wherever. And it never relies on the things like light all the torches, beat all the enemies, step on the switch, and lift up the pots. Like, there's none of that.
You don't get to move, like, a statue on top of a switch that opens another room?
No.
Man!
You don't have to do that.
That's a bummer.
But like I said, it just has that central mechanic. But...
Well, what's generally the payoff of a dungeon like this? Do they give you, like a new item that expands what you can do in the game? Is it sometimes just really awesome gear?
Breath of the Wild doesn't really address things like that.
No.
Breath of the Wild pretty much makes it so... it's more skill-oriented than item-oriented. Like, it's not, you're not sitting there trying to figure out the little puzzles and you're trying to get the item so you can complete this puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go and collect it, that's what you got. And, like, you can go and fight the final boss whenever the hell you want. It's just doing these dungeons makes it easier and...
When you're on the Great Plateau, they equip you with the skills that you're going to need to get to the end of the game, which is the magnesis, the bombs. Those are like your required things. You can't leave the Great Plateau without them. Your payoff for beating a dungeon is first a heart container, so you get some more HP.
Okay.
And then you also get this supplementary power that will kick in, and then also has a cooldown time. So the one you get from the elephant, which is in the Zora area, is this instant revive. You lose all your hearts, it revives you and actually gives you a few bonus hearts that will not replenish once they've been depleted.
Okay.
And
like temporary HP in D&D.
Yeah. So then what will happen is once you've used that, there's like a cooldown time of 20 minutes before it's able to be reactivated. So
it's got this nice little like picture in the corner that refills slowly. You're like, oh, now I know about that. Yeah.
And you get something like that for every dungeon. The one you get from the Goron one is a
shield.
Yeah,
it's like a bubble.
Yeah, an instant block. So you don't have to like do a parry or a dodge. You can just take a hit without losing any hearts or getting knocked down. Mm-hmm. And that one takes a little bit longer, I think, to recharge. But you're gonna.
Well, that's all like good stuff to get early on. Then it's all super defensive. So
yeah,
basically like.
Yeah, yeah.
Oops, you're dead. Never mind.
I'm really curious about what the other two are gonna be.
Yeah, it'll be fun to find out. But like Wes was saying, it's not so much oriented on, like, here's your dungeon, here's the item you find in that dungeon, you're going to need it to fight the boss, and then probably do a little bit of world traversal
but
with
you
it
still
before
get
the next one.
Cool items, right? Like, the game's not hiding cool items from you.
Right, but it's more in the form
it's not like it's gatekeeping you. Like,
right.
Like trying to prevent
yeah, but it's
you
not
from
like
getting
things
anything.
Like, here's a hook shot in this one, and then you get a bow in this one. It's...
So far, there's not a hook shot.
There better be a fucking hook shot.
I'm skeptical.
I
but
swear
so far,
to God, I will drive to Nintendo and
just like stick your head out the window, like, get down here right now.
Oh, Nintendo, I disagree.
Great.
That was a terrible Family Guy reference.
Yeah, no, it was good. I'm gonna leave that in.
I will apologize for that right now.
but like you get. bows, of course, but you can just find them from...
Well, she has all the crafting items and stuff like that, too. Like, you kill enemies to get items that you use for some greater purpose.
Well, you kill enemies and you can harvest their items, their swords, clubs, spears...
Teeth, testicles. Wings,
bat. Those things nice. You can use to craft things like potions that will give you stat buffs.
Hmm.
That's what you're, like, crafting those sort of materials for. And you're like, yeah, and that's sort of like the cooking function where you like just get a bunch of shit that you found and try to cook it and see what you come up with. But as far as like crafting weapons, I haven't encountered anything yet. Seems unlikely at this point.
Well, it's like transmuting, is what you would call it. Like, I mean, if you're using all these different items for cooking purposes to make potions,
yeah,
you're essentially...
There's that, but with weapons, it's literally just what you find in the world, and then eventually they break and you gotta switch to a different sword. But they do it in such an abundance, it's literally, you're just walking down the street and murder a bunch of people, and you're like, holy crap, it's raining swords! It's just... It's kind of nonsense.
Yeah, I've never once been hurting for weapons in this game. Shields, a couple of times, because I try to take on guardians, and sometimes I'm not deflecting their energy beams at quite the right time. And that kills a shield in one hit. But I think it all goes back into like this open-endedness. And the game is really just centered around making choices and having consequences for those choices. And everything revolves around that. Once you're off the Great Plateau, the world is yours to move through. You can choose to go fight Ganon immediately. You'll probably die. A few people have done it. You'll probably die.
There is a speed runner. You did it. 55 minutes?
I think it's down to 47.
47 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
God just damn, I hate
you. Raid the castle, grab as much loot as they can, and go take them on with 3 hearts.
Oh, God.
Okay, so that's the thing. Like, I wanted to mention that about the dungeons. Like, you get these cool, like, little buffs and powers for beating the dungeons. You don't have to. You can go, like, collect as much stuff as you can and never go for any of the dungeons and then go fight Ganon. I think that it'll have some impact on the story, or maybe the difficulty of the boss, if like you go after these dungeons and like the divine beasts, as they call them, like the little robots that you're entering, like then help you out in the final battle. It'll probably make a difference. But you can choose to go in any direction, fight with any weapon, go after any of the divine beasts, any dungeons in any order, fight any enemy that you fucking feel like going up against. There
just murder deer.
Yeah, just killing you. That can be your mission. Just try to kill every deer.
That's my mission with the goats, because those things are assholes. No, I'm just gonna charge you and headbutt you off this cliff.
Just roll down the side of the mountain.
Fuck yourself.
So there are a couple of events or story beats that they hint, that they suggest, like, hey, you're off the Great Plateau. Maybe try to go to this village and see what's there. You can choose to go along with that, or you can just choose to move on. And then, like, from that village, then they hit you with, okay, you got to this village, maybe try to go to this village next. And from the second village, they're like, okay, well, here's all the divine beasts. Go wild. And I think there is a designed path of progression, but it's so slightly hinted at, like, once you get past that second village, it really has to be inferred through intuition rather than the game kind of pointing you, like, that's the next one you should go to. They really only do that, like, through proximity. Like, so once you're done with the second village, the next closest thing is to go to the Zoras and then the Gorons. And from there, I'm not really quite sure where I'm going to go next, because I'm just kind of lollygagging.
Yeah, just because of past things with Zelda, if I was playing it, I'd go to the bird people next.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just because of Ocarina. You just deal with the Gerudo people last. Spear Temple.
I mean, it probably will be the last one I go to, even though I really like Gerudo settings and the sort of gameplay conceits when you get to Gerudo areas, where you have to be a little bit more stealthy. But because
they would be doing that, wouldn't they? That'd be so cool.
Yeah, because in Ocarina you have the Gerudo Fortress you gotta escape.
Yep, which was a great level.
Yeah. And then in Majora's Mask, you pretty much have another Gerudo Fortress where you, like, if you wear the stone mask, it's no problem.
Yep.
But because you have this freedom of choice in the game, they don't really have this, like, progression of increasing difficulty. Everything's just kind of thrown around through the world. They had a similar method of progression in A Link Between Worlds. Once you're through the initial area, you can go to any dungeon you feel like. The solution there was it just kind of made everything generally easier. You don't really get anything too difficult within a Link Between Worlds. In Breath of the Wild, they take the totally opposite approach, where you can go wherever you feel like it, but if you wander around too much, fuck you, here's a Lionel, you're about to die. The Lionels are those lion centaur things that
murder you. Oh, yeah, they're just shooting those lightning arrows at you.
That's the fucking worst. I felt like I was doing pretty well against them. Like the
first,
the first time
you fought them, I was like, yeah, you can take this guy.
That was the best I'd ever done against one, because that was the only time it's never pulled his bow on me. Mm-hmm. And once he started shooting you with those like lightning arrows, god damn it.
Can you deflect them?
Not that I'm aware. I mean, maybe he's like a perfect shield guard, but I don't know. But it's that opposite take on that freedom of choice that they have. Like in A Link Between Worlds, it was, okay, you can go wherever you want. Let's make everything a little bit easier so that you're not overwhelmed by the first thing you take on. In Breath of the Wild, it's go wherever you want if you're brave enough. So you can choose to do anything, but you'll probably end up making some wrong choices. So when you do end up making those bad choices, it'll lead you somewhere. It'll lead you to something cool. And that's what's really great about the game, is it does have this really amazing sense of discovery. That's the other side of having like these really cruel traps with really powerful enemies you can
that's
never...
That's the thing about you that you always liked about. I remember just growing up, you were like, especially with Twilight, you just explored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta find all the shit. And yeah. Zelda, I will not find all the shit in Breath of the Wild. It won't happen.
You don't want to pull 100%?
Nope, not gonna do it.
So I get 900 of those seeds to get that golden poop?
I sure don't. I sure don't. But the game, even though it doesn't pull its punch, it is very generous with checkpoints. You never really lose much of your progress.
You collected
when
all those sculptures. Why don't you just...
There was only 100 of those in a much more compact world. Fine. Another 900%. Yes, let's do that. It allows you to... It does autosave, and it autosaves with multiple save states. So you can go back through this list of different save states. Like, if you want to backtrack further to where you previously were, I've never once gotten myself into such a terrible situation where I needed to backtrack multiple saves to get myself out of it. It also helps that you can warp whenever you feel like it. You can be about to die in a battle, like, nope, I'm leaving, and warp on out of there.
Yeah, you fell down a cliff and you warped out.
Sure did. It's much easier than trying to climb back up. But you do feel the sense of consequence to every decision, every element of the game. If you take on a powerful enemy, or if you're trying to climb a mountain or a cliff that's too tall to climb up, if you're trying to swim over a great distance, there's a tension to everything you're doing if you're not sure if you're going to be successful. Or like using weapons that you really like, because if you use them, they're going to break. And you might not ever find anything that cool ever again.
That's why you take pictures of them.
Right.
Which I think is the greatest thing they could have added.
So you can douse in on your
weapons. I think it's amazing. I think that's brilliant what they did with that.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, I want to find one of these later. Take a picture, boom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to, like, douse you in on it over the whole map. You will have to be relatively close to it, but...
You can go to the general area, but like, all right, I want this ice sword, but let's go to a snowy area.
Yeah. But...
Which I think that thing was awesome.
Yeah. And every choice has repercussions, which is just brilliant design. And all the elements that we can talk about this game feed back into that central design of having this openness of choice and consequence to everything you're doing. And I think this has become like the textbook for open world games at this point. Like, this is what everything's going to get compared to now.
Just like Skyrim was.
Yep. Masterpiece of modern gaming.
Mm-hmm. Which, now that you're seeing this, I used to recommend Skyrim for you, but you're not going to like Skyrim after playing this.
I mean, I might try it, just to make fun of it and drive you nuts.
I love that game! It's so damn good!
If only they know those bugs. You know.
They're so little now. They're so little.
I don't believe you.
So little bugs.
Anyway, I'm still, you know... I will probably wrap this game up before Skyrim comes out. So, depending, like... Okay, so we didn't talk about this in the news section, but Nintendo of Europe did reconfirm Xenoblade Chronicles 2 for 2017. I'm still skeptical.
I doubt it.
I would be super impressed if they launched Zelda and Xenoblade within the same year. That would, and a Mario. Like, that would be crazy impressive.
Oh, that Mario, I can't wait.
If Skyrim comes out close to Xenoblade, sorry, Skyrim.
Yeah, no, yeah, digital. That's fine.
But, you know, if there's some time in between, some stuff, like Skyrim, I'm interested.
I'm just going to bring my PS4 over one day, and you can just experience it.
Okay.
That's just the way it is, because I love this game so much.
But also out on...
Well, Skyrim Day, it'll be great. It'll be great.
Also out this month, Bomberman 64 came out on the Wii U Virtual Console, Speak of the Devil. Shovel Knight Treasure Trove came out on Switch. Treasure Trove is the Switch version of Shovel Knight. It also includes the Spectre of Torment, which is the latest expansion of Shovel Knight, where you can play Spectre Knight. That one is not actually out on every other system until April. So
oh, wow.
A little bit of an early release for Switch. Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus is out on Switch, as are Human Resource Machine and Little Inferno and World of Goo, a couple of games from the Wii U and the Wii. Has-Been Heroes is out on Switch. Super Mario Run came out on Android and Google Play. Great.
Really?
Yep, sure did.
I gotta take a look at that.
I don't want
to spend $10 on that, though.
Mario Sports Superstars came out on 3DS. And as of recording... Actually, no, Snake Pass is already out. Snake Pass came out earlier today at time of recording here, and that is out on Switch. So, let's take a break and then wrap things up here. Mm-hmm. We're almost done. I'm still in the Chris Claremont era. I think I'm in 1981, 1982.
I don't think I can read this old X-Men stuff just because of the way that it is.
Yeah, I kind of have to retrain your brain. Mm-hmm. But anyway, okay, so we got new games coming out. We got two games to bring up. Wes, take us away with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Sure. As soon as I figure out how to work a Mac. Frack!
Eat a dick, Apple.
No, you hold down the two and then you press the thing.
Hold down the what?
Yeah, and then you gotta jiggle it. Just
yeah.
A little bit.
Okay, use two fingers and jiggle it.
Yeah, yeah. Use your kneecap if you got it.
How the hell does this work?
What is the problem?
Like, scroll down.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Use the arrow keys. Come on.
Oh, yeah, all right.
What if this pick up, pick down?
Is this a computer? Race and battle your friends in the definitive version of Mario Kart 8. Definitive version. That seems...
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Hit the road with the definitive version of Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
And play anytime, anywhere. Title, first sentence. What the hell? Race your friends or battle them in a revised battle mode.
In the definitive version.
In the definitive version.
Definitive version.
In a revised battle mode on new and returning battle courses. Play locally in up to 4-player multiplayer and 1080p while playing in TV mode. Every track from the Wii U version, including DLC, makes a glorious return. Plus, the Linklings appear as all new guest characters.
Inklings.
Inklings? Yeah. Oh, that is an I. Yeah. Along with returning favorites such as King Boo, Drybones, and Bowser Jr.
Drybones is almost worth the purchase.
Right there. Boom. Yeah. Just boom. Features, aka bullet points.
Yes. The definitive version.
Race your friends in the definitive version of Mario Kart 8. Only on the Nintendo Switch. Race as every character on every track from the Wii U version, including DLC characters and tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Pop some balloons in the revamped battle mode, complete with balloon battle and bomb blast. Battle on new courses like Urchin Underpass and Battle Stadium, or returning ones such as GCN Luigi's Mansion and SNES Battle Course 1. Inkling Girl and Inkling Boy from Splatoon, King Boo, Dry Bones, and Bowser Jr. join the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Players can choose a new smart steering feature that makes driving and staying on the track easy for novice players and kids, even at 200cc. Three new vehicles have been added. Two are even inspired by the Splatoon.
Oh my god, are we still in bullet points? This is amazing.
Yeah, there's like four more. Carry two items at the same time. Oh cool, they got that
back. Double dash, that's nice.
Fantastic. Returning items include Boo, the item-stealing ghost, and the feather, which gives you a high jump in battle mode.
Huh.
Play your friends in local wireless multiplayer or with up to 8 players. Drive through in 1080p HD quality in TV mode.
Mm-hmm.
Play on the go with handheld mode and play anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
That's great. All right.
So, I mean, it's a really great package, especially with, like, the new modes and, like, all of the DLC. It's, like, $20 for the DLC and Dry Bones. Yeah,
Dry Bones.
No question.
Dry Bones.
I
just hope he falls apart in bones whenever you kill him on the course.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to make this a day one purchase. But my Wii U is still hooked up. Like, I didn't expect that I was going to be able to keep my Wii U and the Switch both hooked. It turns out my TV has three HDMI ports, which is exactly what I need.
Nice.
So, and
well, if you ever need another one,
another.
Where your Shag sell Switches?
are the, you mean splitters?
Yeah. Well, no, they're HDMI switches, so you hit a button for which HDMI you want to use.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Also, like, it goes into one port, and then you got, like, another.
Yeah, it has multiple inputs, but one output to the TV, and you just hit the switch for which device.
Okay,
so this one's
to,
an HDMI one.
Up
boom.
To do it? Oh my god.
Well, you can buy the more expensive one that has a remote.
Cool. How plebeian. How good. Yeah, remotes are good.
It's a legit sport.
Go. Can I get one that's like.
Scratch your balls too? No.
No, can I get one that has like a wired like dial pad that'll go to the couch?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And does it come with extra HDMI cords? Because I have one.
like a different device.
No, they don't, because Ray Shack wants all your money. So,
well,
another reason why they're...
I don't want to rub salt in the wounds.
No, it's fine. Ray Shack shit. I'll badmouth the crap out of this company.
They made so many bad
decisions.
They need the money.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, I mean, like,
they have to call themselves a shack.
Yeah.
Radio Emporium.
What's really
Radio
funny,
Shanty.
What's yes. really funny about Radio Shack is
Radio Hostel.
We have this like video reel that we have to put on our TV, and there's this really annoying song. It's like, "The Shack is back, and that's a fact. Get your game on track." It's really annoying, and it's really funny that we still have to play it, and my store is closing. So now that you hear "The Shack is back," and we have closing signs up so clearly. We're not.
No, just like censor it.
This is the most annoying thing. Like, all right, we really should just stop this. It makes us look even more.
What would
bullish.
Be great? What would be so fucking awesome to me is if Radio Shack decided, you know what? We're taking the ship down with us, and they decided to reopen half the store as like an Auntie Annie's, where they just have pretzels and lemonade. They're just like, fuck you. You're going out of business, not us. This would be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be good. But when I was setting up the Switch, I realized I had more HDMI ports. And the Wii U pretty much stays hooked up because it's a better streaming device than my Blu-ray player. It's actually a pretty decent streaming device. And I can stream Amazon on it. I can't do that.
Stream what?
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon's amazing.
Sure is.
Oh, yeah.
So, the Wii U staying hooked up. And as long as I get the Wii U hooked up, I still have access to Mario Kart 8. So, you know, maybe one day I'll double dip on Mario Kart 8. But it's not happening anytime soon. But anyway, let's move over to Shovel Knight Spectre of Torment, which is going to be a free update for anyone who currently owns Shovel Knight.
Can we backtrack for just one second?
Like, oh, yeah.
Actually, I do have kind of a genuine question. So Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Yes.
Does that mean that is Dry Bones not in Mario Kart 8, the version you have?
Right.
No.
So if somebody, can you play somebody on the Switch in your version, or are you forced into different lanes where you have to play with your own?
I don't know if it's cross-platform online, because it would normally be, this is the Wii U version, so you're going to race other people who are playing the Wii U version. Here's a Switch version, you're only going to race
people. Oh, okay, they're not going to try and make it, so.
I don't think
but
so.
I imagine a logistical nightmare to do that.
Yeah.
Especially if they have access to stuff. Mm-hmm. But you don't like the like Dry Bones or
yeah, the other characters.
Splatoon characters.
Or like in Mario Kart 8, there was like this $20 DLC packet added, like 16 racetracks or something like that. And, you know, if you have it on the Wii U, it's likely you've bought the DLC at this point. But the Switch version comes with all of that already included.
Okay.
So if you're playing the Switch version and someone from the Wii U...
Game of the Year edition sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like you get everything up to the thing.
But it's like you're talking about, kind of like fragments the market to where, like, you know, if you don't have the DLC, but then you're still, like, accessing tracks that were DLC through online play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not exactly fair to people who paid for it.
Now, before I read this, John,
yeah.
Who is the Spectre Knight?
Spectre Knight was the kind of like the ghostly knight boss character in Shovel Knight.
So he's another boss that is now as a playable.
Yeah.
He looks badass.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what did he do in the game?
He floated around and slashed you with a scythe.
That's it?
He also teleported.
Okay.
Well, that's what they did with the DLC for, well, the expansion for Diablo 3,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, normally you're fighting the demons from hell, and they did this interesting thing where you're actually going up against this guy Malfeo, who is the Angel of Death.
Hmm.
So it's technically a corrupted
that
angel.
Was cool. That was
fighting.
Cool.
So that's a neat.
He was a cool boss fight too.
Yeah,
he was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and he's kind of like this, except instead of the giant thresher, he's got two
like two
sides.
Little ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's about to cut down a field of wheat.
Yeah.
Or like Scyther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Pokemon.
Knife arms.
Pokemon.
Shovel Knight, Spectre of Torment is the action-packed prequel to Shovel Knight. Take control of Spectre Knight, servant to the Enchantress, in a quest to recruit a cadre of knights and create the Order of No Quarter. Great name.
Mm-hmm.
With his scythe and perpetual agility at the ready, he can glide across the ground, clamber up walls, and command an arsenal of curious weapons. I'm curious about the weapons. If he carries out his duties, Spectre Knight may have a chance at regaining his lost humanity and breaking his chains of servitude. But what cruel tricks might the Enchantress have up her sleeve? And then, you know, tells you how many buy it. It's already included with the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Curious weapons, they say.
Yeah, curious weapons. I am curious about the
weapons.
Yeah, sword, you go with the scabbard, not another sword.
No bullet points? That'd be a good
bullet points.
Curious weapons.
Curious weapons.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. So do you guys own Shovel Knight?
I don't. I really
don't
need to get it.
I mean, I played
like
a
how
little
much
bit.
Is it?
Because
I mean,
you were
just
playing it.
I mean, buy it.
It looks awesome.
Yeah,
this game
I think it's $20. But like once you buy it, they just have access to all of these updates that they're doing. Because these are all stretch goals that were part of the Kickstarter. God, it feels like forever ago. It was probably 4 or 5 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
And... you know, the game released.
So that's still paying off?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, the game released 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still doing these free. And, like, even after they finish this one, they still have another stretch goal they had for a new campaign for, I believe it's King Knight, which is awesome.
You know, it sounds like you know more about that. And who's King Knight?
King Knight is...
Is it just a name?
Yeah, that's the character's
name.
He's one of the first bosses that you encounter.
It's like a game called General Lieutenant.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
yeah, but it's great because he is a knight and his persona is very real. He wears a crown, he's got a throne and a robe and stuff.
$25.
25, huh?
Yeah, to download it.
Oh, they must have jacked up the price.
Now, for first time players... How would you recommend this?
What do you mean?
Like, do you just go straight in as Shovel Knight and play through it, or do you play through as the Plague Knight first and
see
it from their perspective?
No, I think...
So you feel like a dick when you go and kill him in the actual game?
No, I guess you're worried about that. I think you play through Shovel Knight first, because I think Shovel Knight does the best job of introducing you to the playstyle and has a really good pace. Plague Knight can be a bit unwieldy at times, so I think you're better off playing through the game initially to familiarize yourself with level layouts and stuff before jumping into Plague Knight.
Bullet points. Shovels.
Plagues.
Knights.
Spectres.
Curious weapons.
Curious weapons.
Order, so no quarter.
Enchantress.
But yeah, that'd be cool. So I think I got
Clamber.
I just gave the word Clamber.
Who's the fucking thesaurus?
I mean, I can't remember the last time I've seen or even said the word Clamber, so I came to it in that paragraph. I literally in my head went, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah. In the context, like, how do I say this? You clamber up a wall.
How do I say this word? I don't know how to say this. Unless they climb, but that's wrong.
How many times did they say climb? Like, do they need a new word?
Just randomly clamber in the middle of the paragraph. It's just
so terrible. Clamber makes it sound like he's doing like effervescent.
How many colors did that painting really need?
That's what you're saying when you're saying, should we not have 1,000 words that mean one thing? We should have 1,000,000,000,000 words that mean one thing.
Saunter through the levels.
Yes.
He clambered up a wall.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, that'll be fun to talk about next month. We won't be talking about Mario Kart 8, because I'm not going to buy it. Unless you guys are going to buy it.
You rebel. No, I'm getting it. I'm getting the deluxe. I'm going to play it on my Wii U. I'm going to tell you how
you
it goes.
You can't get the deluxe version of the Wii U.
I know.
I've
got to do it, though.
It's got to hack the Wii U.
I'm going to go draw boobs on the edge sketch.
Yeah. Go ahead. They always come out squares.
Yeah. I want to make this happen.
Okay.
So, well, what is it like? Is the Switch now like just... can't get it in stores, or is it kind of steadily in print now? Like,
there's pretty steady shipments, and they've actually they pretty much doubled their production for the fiscal year 2017. So they were initially expecting to ship 8 million by next March, and they've upped that to 16 because of demand.
Great.
So yeah, first time ever, they're like,
we're going to tell you. They've proven we don't know how many of our own consoles to make.
Well, you know, they are shipping 2 million by the end of this month. So in 1 month, they'll ship okay. 2 million.
So if there is a shortage, it's certainly temporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's one of those things where the first time ever, they've actually like given numbers. Like, hey, we're going to ship this many. Like... and then this many in the next fiscal year. Like, oh shit, there's people are wanting a lot of these things. Let's up. No, okay, now we're going to ship 16. It's like, they've discovered transparency.
Oh, you know, there's some employee at Nintendo in Japan that hanged himself in shame for letting those numbers out.
They don't do that there. They get out a sword and stab themselves.
So, God, that's what they're into.
Well, another guy cuts his head off.
They go to that haunted woods.
Well, fucking octopus is raping people.
Go Japan! Way to go! Back at it again.
Oh.
But yeah, like...
We're not going to like have any of this on the show, are we? Are we recording?
I don't know. No, like, well, you know, if you are interested in buying a Switch, you probably need to keep an eye on the internet, see when people are getting restocks, and... it'll get easier as the weeks go on, but you know it's been there's been demand.
People, that's good.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I think that's the end. Do we have anything else? Okay,
I'm good. Baseball soon.
Yeah, baseball soon.
What a week away, right? It's like the third
time of recording. Yeah, we're like what 5 days? Oh, 5 days out.
Actual baseball's about to happen.
Right. Ooh. Bring it on. Yeah. I'm ready. But
I think we're going to root for the Yankees this year.
That is a terrible decision.
Jeez.
I'm kidding.
Good Lord.
I'm kidding.
That's like being disappointed.
I know, right? Oh, I'm just kidding. God, they're terrible.
I think we're going to eat it.
It's like you're rooting for. It's like you're rooting for all of the major...
Fine, you go eat at Denny's. I'll go eat at Applebee's.
Oh, God.
Hey, Denny's is all right.
We'll text each other how bad our night goes.
Applebee's is genuinely shit. Because Applebee's is trying.
Denny's is a fuck.
They know exactly what they're doing. They don't care if it's 3 in the morning.
You
that's what they're doing.
You walk in the door, you know what's happening here, right? You know what you're getting in for?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's like if you go to an AA meeting and then you go to a bar. It's like, everyone's just like, welcome home, buddy. You almost made a good life decision. Here's some fucking omelets.
Oh, my God.
All right, that's the end. Till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.